Now I am recording. That is disgusting, and no one's going to know who we were talking about. All right, so hey, Ben, this is Michael Dean. How are you doing, Ben Stone?
Hey, Michael, good to talk to you.
Yeah, we're going to call this a Freedom Fiends. We called the last one a Freedom Fiends. Hey, do you mind if I put this out to a limited audience for one day and then put it out to the general public? I want to have it, just give it out to my donators on Patreon.
Your Patriots?
My Patriots, yeah. Is that all right?
Yeah, no problem at all.
Cool. Yeah. Thank you, Patriots. I'm reclaiming that word. Yeah, it means people who give money to me. So what's new, Ben Stone, the Bad Quaker? It's been a month since our last chat.
Yeah. What has been going on? I don't know. A lot of things. I about blew my brain out a couple of days ago. Not physically, but we had Derek and I were making some adjustments at the same time that my internet service provider,
Derek Slopey.
Yeah.
Good. Yeah.
He and I were making some adjustments on websites, on multiple websites at the same time. And my internet provider, Spectrum, decided to make some adjustments on their end at the same time.
They do that. They're my provider. They're one of my providers, too, and they're one of the reasons I have two providers.
They upset me pretty bad this week.
Yeah.
And it cost me probably about 40 hours of me not being able to access any of my websites or a bunch of other websites.
What'd they do? What happened?
I think that I'm not sure exactly what they did, but I think it involved them not refreshing something on their end, because Derek moved some servers, and then my email inadvertently, without me realizing
they've got the slowest updating of DNS server changes of anyone. Whenever I make a change, this is kind of bizarre, but I usually unplug my fast cable account from my router and start, like, when I'm building a new website, you know, I buy the account, get the domain name, you know, 20, 25 minutes later, you're supposed to be able to, you know, these days, it used to be a day always, but now it's only a day on Spectrum, it seems like. And I usually switch over to my slow DSL account because it updates DNS way faster than Spectrum.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
So I can start building the website. Yeah.
It ended up with my email account, because I didn't think about it, you know, it refreshes every minute. So it ended up with my email account just pounding Derek's server with a bad request and a bad password. And so his server automatically blocked me out and locked my IP address.
Yeah, that's funny. That can happen.
Yeah, it was just a series of silly little things that got us all at the same time. And it followed a really weird event that happened in the middle of the night before all this took place. And if I was the paranoid foil hat type, I would be really upset about it. But I'm not. I think I have a logical answer for what happened.
Yeah, is it?
It was like 10:30, 11 o'clock at night, something like that. And my daughter, I was sitting here with headphones on watching a show on Netflix, and my daughter comes to the edge of my bedroom and it's like, hey, hey, hey. And so I took off my headphones, went up there to see what she was doing, what was wrong. She took me out in the backyard and we looked, and there's all these guys like milling around in the yard behind ours and in the other like 4 yards that are adjacent to ours. And they've all got these big LED light bars that are about 3 feet wide and super bright.
Government.
And they're shining them. What's that?
Is that government?
We didn't know who it was at first, because in the adjacent street on the other side of the block, we could see, the red and blue lights like a cop car.
Yeah, the red, white, and blue that they used to subtly scare you of, make you scared of your flag. If it's your flag, it's not my flag, but you ever notice that we talked about that before, I think, that the cop bars are now red, white, and blue. They used to be red and blue, but then they could add white, and they did. And they want to panic you when you see the flag. So every time you see a flag, you'll panic and be subservient to the state.
That's kind of a subtle brainwash thing.
It is. That's my theory.
Yeah.
Yep.
So we didn't know what they were doing or who they were. or why they're walking around in all these yards with these weird light bars looking at the ground. That's what they were shining on. Look, and I could see people in other houses looking out their windows like, I don't know what's going on, but I'm not going outside, you know, because there's a certain level of fear of anything like this. So my daughter and I just real quickly went out the door and started walking around the block. Let's go see what's going on. We've got cameras. We're ready for whatever, you know. Let's just go see.
Guns and cameras. And it turned out, the road to security.
Yeah. And it turned out it was really weird because the Spectrum trucks that were still marked as Time Warner Cable had red and blue lights like cops. And I've never seen utility trucks with red and blue lights.
I would
think
that'd be illegal. I would think that the cops would want a monopoly on that color, like trademark.
I thought there were rules on that.
Yeah, trademark of your, you know, not trademark, but you're imitating the cops, and we want to be intimidating, and you can't. Yeah.
Yeah, it's their monopoly of control.
Yeah.
My logical belief on this, they broke up about the time we got around there. They all jumped in their trucks and took off. And my belief on this, or my assumption on this, I should say, is that they suspected someone was stealing cable at nighttime by just laying the cable across the yard.
Yeah.
And so they were looking at the boxes that were in the common areas of the yards and looking for, you know, cables that somebody might drag out at nighttime and hook to it to get free HBO or
whatever. So wait, you think they think that there's people that only steal cable at night and then roll the cables up in the morning?
That's the only thing I could figure. Maybe, you know, maybe somebody, when they leave for work or something, they unplug it.
Maybe they were doing work on cables. They generally do it at night.
They may have been, but our internet didn't go out and our TV cable didn't go out.
Yeah, it might have been a thing, though, where, like, you know, they do it at night and they leave a little bit up, but, you know, they couldn't do it during the day because, you know, they have to reduce the capacity to work on it. That's possible.
It could be.
I know that
could be.
The thing that made me really just break down and get a second internet connection was that they were in my, well, everywhere possibly, but it was actually told to me by a guy from Spectrum because they sent like four people out. Like I was having blackouts for like 4 hours at night of internet where I could barely connect to anything. Definitely couldn't do a show. And it would happen like during show hours, you know, like it would just start like an hour before the Fiends and end about an hour after the Fiends. And, you know, it turned out that it was, oh, and they, you know, tech support tried to tell me, oh, it's just, those are peak times. And I'm like, 11 o'clock on a work night. No, it's not peak times, you know, And all my neighbors are old. They go to bed anyway at 7:30, you know, peak times might be 6 a.m. when they get up, but And they were either lying or they weren't letting the tech people know. And I got, you know, bumped up and they sent out, finally they were like, you know, we're going to send out the next level of technician. They sent out a better guy. And he said, oh, well, they're massively overselling their capacity and using the money for ads to get even more capacity and then get more equipment. So, you know, the consumer suffers and they're not telling anybody. And I was like, thank you. Why are you telling me this? And he said, I'm leaving tomorrow to start my own internet security company. I'm too smart for the little bit they're paying me. So, yeah,
that could easily be it. They may be sending them out to work at night, you know, for whatever reason.
I think it is.
But then the next day, all this stuff happened with the websites, and both Derek and I were just racking our brains trying to get all of these things fixed. And my wife was on the phone with Spectrum for, I think it was either 4 or 5 hours as they escalated her from level to level.
Yeah.
And they pretended like they didn't know what she was talking about when she would tell them that they need to renew, you know, they need to refresh.
Oh, they don't know. They don't know.
Yeah.
They don't know that.
No, they don't.
No.
First and second level tech people don't know any of those things.
Well, that's why you should have a VPN, too, because you can also, without having a second internet connection, if you want to, like, you know, make change, you could just switch to a VPN. And, you know, the thing that I found was there's only two places that I've looked, like, yeah, there's actually sites that test propagation of DNS, free sites that you just put in an IP or a web address and it tells you which servers it's connected to. And this one company has like 35 servers around the world, and the only two places that it's as slow as Spectrum in Wyoming is rural Afghanistan. They have a server there, and Detroit. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. All right. So we got to blame the government, too. The reason this happens is because government monopolies. Laws have led to monopolies, to where there could only be one provider of each type in each area. Some places, maybe two, like LA type size places. But most places have one cable provider, one DSL provider, and, you know, one satellite internet provider, maybe. But Yep.
Yeah, we had tried to get satellite internet here because we already had accounts with Dish and everything. And for some reason, they don't service this area, and they wouldn't tell us the reason. Well, the reason why is because Spectrum has a monopoly that the government has granted them.
Yep. Thanks, government. Ugh. No, not That's a good sound. Ugh. That's the bad sound. Yeah.
Government is like having dogs that are in your yard regularly. And you just never know when you're going to step in a pile of government.
Step in a pile of government. I would use that as the name of the show if we didn't have a... We actually have a better name of the show. I think the name of the show is The 12 Traditions of Statist Anonymous. Statists Anonymous.
We should probably talk about that, too, because we've already talked a lot about things that are not...
Yeah, yeah, if we're going to talk about that. So, The 12 Steps of Statist Anonymous. So, we did... 12 episodes you and I did that were the 12 steps of Statist Anonymous, and it was one step per episode. So there's 12 of those on the Freedom Fiends, and they are, you know, we took the 12 steps of AA and applied them to the disease of government instead of the disease of alcoholism, and it worked quite well. We had a lot of fun with it. You know, my opinions vary on AA. You know, people's opinions vary on AA. You know, Jim Jesus says it's all hooey, and he quotes some statistics. See, here's the problem with statistics about AA. In my experience, AA, you know, I think it's kind of culty, and I think it's a harmless cult. And Jim Jesus agrees with that. Jim's a cult catcher. Jim Jesus goes after hooey and cults all the time, and he's good at it. But it kind of irks me how anti-AA he is. And here's the it's kind of weird to say, but I have a soft spot in my heart for AA because it was the only thing that got me clean when I was on the way to dying. And Jim would say, well, that's not scientific. You know, if there's no reason it should work, then people shouldn't go to it. You know, that's kind of Jim's belief. And my belief is it's kind of like religion. If it works and saves you from dying, it's worth going to, you know?
Yeah, even if it's a placebo effect, and it very well may be.
That's a lot of it, yeah.
That a placebo can have, especially when you're dealing with something that's in your brain anyway, which all addictions are basically in your brain. Well, I shouldn't say all addictions, because you can be physically addicted to.
Yeah, definitely.
Like with heroin.
Yeah, but physical addiction, like, you know, let's say people who don't have an addictive personality who get medically addicted to morphine from, you know, having a broken back or something. Those people can be weaned off and don't have a big chance of going back to it. Now, there are a lot of people who are heroin addicts who became addicted from medical reasons, but those people had a predisposition to addiction. And AA, of course, says it's a spiritual disease combined with a, I forget the term, something like, you know, basically saying like it's a lack of God and too much ego or something. But here, my problem with AA, and this is Jim's problem also with AA, is that AA pretends it's science and it's not science. But, you know, like the 12 steps are presented like you have to follow. People in the groups are pretty much like you have to follow them. You have to do them in order. The order makes sense, but. And there's also a lot of you will die if you don't do this. And I went to AA meetings from 1994 till 2006 fairly regularly and then stopped going. And my life actually got better when I stopped going. But partly, I think, is because I had a lot of sobriety and a lot of tools under my belt, and Jim Jesus. It's funny I'm talking about him so much. I'm dissing him. It's just it's weird to me how much of an opponent he is of AA, and you know, he's one of our co-hosts, and I like him. And Ben's a fiend for life. You can't get out of here. There's no way, man. And
I have a lot of respect for Jim. He's really a sharp guy.
Me too. I've been using his Amazon affiliate link recently, which is Amazon.com/http. No, it's too long. Okay, so go to his site. Go to lulberts.com. Click on his donate link. I think it's there. Or you can use mine. I'd rather use mine. Ben doesn't have anyone anymore. Ben doesn't have a affiliate link anymore, do you?
That's correct. None.
Yeah. So,
Hey, Mike, yeah? Before we leave the topic of Jim Jesus, let me just throw this in.
All right.
I
wasn't done with that guy. Go on.
I really enjoy the episodes of either Lulberts or The Fiends where you have, his name, James
Weeks and Jim Jesus.
James Weeks the second and Jim Jesus together.
They're a good
because
combo.
Because James Weeks is, he has such an addictive and eruptive and contagious laughter it's just hilarious. And Jim seems to just poke him just perfect to keep him laughing and feed him material that he finds funny. And it really makes for a good show. I really like those guys together.
Yeah, me too. They're good. Yeah, let's see. I have those two from weeks ago. Yeah, I don't know how to make the messages disappear in Signal. Like sometimes, you know, you set it to disappear in a day, and sometimes I have messages from weeks ago. I don't know what's up. Get your act together, Signal. And I Googled it and can't find it. So anyway, Jim Jesus, I have a problem with people who are extraordinarily critical of AA or allow themselves to be talked into it. Like, I really like Tom Woods. I mean, I don't listen to him, but I think he's, you know, I'm programming him on my cussfreeliberty.org site, which is a streaming site that's like cussfree liberty, like LRN without the cussing. It's a bunch of shows and it's great. And it's really fun. You know, someone asked me the other day why I started doing that. There's a few reasons. And one is, you know, because for people who want to broadcast stuff, and I think that you're less likely to get in trouble with the man if you're not broadcasting cussing, it's for bringing people into liberty who don't like cussing, generally young people who are controlled by their parents or old people. You know, it's really surprising, though. It's having another side effect, too, which is weeding out non-libertarians who say that. Because can you see where I'm going with this?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Let me hear
what
you're going to say. I didn't tell you this.
So specifically, shall we use the C word?
don't cuss because I want to broadcast this or put this on the stream. But what?
I was going to say can't. Well,
oh.
But people like that who depend on a flash and an overemphasis of drama.
I swear like a that's not it. No, there are people who, like on Punk Rock Libertarians, where I'm one of the editors now, I put, and like, you know, nothing bad about that site. It's a great page on, but it's got like, you know, 170,000 followers or something. So like, you know, everything gets a really raw, broad, you know, comments from every kind of person who calls himself a libertarian, from like, you know, straight up ANCAPs down to like, you know, Austin Peterson worshiper idiots, to Libertarian Party members, to, you know, people who don't believe in politics at all like us. And varying levels of maturity as people, as well as libertarians. And I'm amazed at the number of comments when I posted on there, you know, about cuss-free liberty, how many people said like, man, that's not cool. That's not libertarian. That's censorship is my favorite ridiculous comment, because those are people who don't understand private ownership.
Right.
Explain what that means.
Yeah. So in my living room, let's say, for example, in my living room, if I say, hey, I don't want, let's say I'm Hans Hermann Hoppe. Okay. I'm not me. I'm Hans Hermann Hoppe. And I hate everybody who's gay and everybody who's not, you know, pearly white like me with an Aryan background and speaks with a slight German accent.
I don't know why you like that guy. Do you like that guy anymore?
Oh, I like aspects of things that he said, ugh, but him as a person, he's
see. I can't do that. I take the Molyneux thing that should be used against Molyneux. Molyneux said a long time ago, you know, you can't believe anything a philosopher says if he is very wrong on other basic thing. You know, I don't believe the one from column A, one from column B. I do with people that I kind of disagree with on some things, or I don't like their style on one thing, but overall they're solid. Like Tom Woods, for instance. But Tom Woods had a guy on. This almost blew it for me for Tom Woods. Tom Woods had a guy on who's a famous guy for debunking AA. And he's writing books. He's touring. He's doing the talk show circuit. I forget his name, but he's, you know, he gives these statistics of like, you know, AA's success rate is like 1%, he says. And, you know, it leads to suicide. And in my experience, AA's success rate is like 50 or 60% of like people I know who went into AA went every day for, you know, at least a year, or every other day for at least a year. Like I would say like half of those people, you know, 5 years later are sober.
But they're anonymous. That's
the thing. That's the thing. There's a couple things here. One is, and part of this was based on, you know, cold calling people. Like, it's anonymous. You don't tell, you know, it's actually okay to answer something like that. Like that's not breaking your anonymity to tell one person who's not in recovery who you are and that you're in recovery. You know, but it's a very strong thing in AA of like, you can choose to be anonymous, and that's very encouraged if you want. It's to encourage people to come into recovery who are afraid of social stigma. So it's not surprising that a large majority of people in AA, if called on the phone by a stranger and they said, you know, are you in AA? They'd say, I can't do this right now. Or no, they'd say no, you know, or they wouldn't say, the only rule of AA is you don't talk about AA. There's people that actually believe that. And that rule in Fight Club is kind of a misinterpretation in a funny way of AA. You know, that's the anonymity of AA in Fight Club. It is. So he has this guy who is a Hollywood to the stars psychiatrist. He's a psychiatrist who charges $450 an hour, whose practice is in Beverly Hills. Of course, that guy is going to be on a rampage against AA. It's competition. AA is free. You put a couple bucks in the hat if you have the money, you know, to pay for the coffee and the room rental in the church basement. It doesn't cost anything. They're, you know, think about it's and shrinks aren't bad. I'm not one of these anti-shrink people. I don't hate the idea of psychiatry, but I think that there's a lot of government intervention too. There's a lot of statism in a lot of psychiatry, especially since it's, you know, you can't legally practice it without a license. So, this guy's statistics were wonky. He was picking and choosing. He was framing his arguments in a certain way to come to a certain conclusion, which is the opposite of science. And he was presenting it as science. And that was one of his complaints, was that AA presents as science and is not. Well, his whole spiel is not science. And I don't really stick up for AA that much. Like, you know, I don't, it's not my religion. I actually wrote a whole book kind of saying why, you know, let's move beyond it. It's called A User's Manual for the Human Experience. And that's where I got this idea of what we're talking about, of applying the 12 steps to other things. So recently somebody wrote me and said, hey, it's, you know, it's great that you did a show with Ben the other day, that you guys are feeling good enough. Cause for people that don't know, Ben and I have both been sick for a couple of years to where we couldn't really do shows very often.
Both of us almost dying.
Yeah, both of us almost dying, being in the hospital several times. And, you know, we're both not out of the woods, but we're both better enough that we can do shows sometimes. So, and like for, you know, you can't do them that often, but I do two or three a week, but doing another show with you on top of that is, you know, I've made a rule of once a month for now for that. Yeah. And I actually mark it on the calendar, not to the day, but around a month. So,
getting back to the Hans Hermann Hoppe thing.
Yeah, I'll come back to my thought when you're done.
So pretend that it's Hans Hermann Hoppe's living room, right?
Oh, yeah.
And he's a bigot and he's a jerk and whatever, but it's his living room. So if he doesn't want any gays in his living room and he doesn't want any people of color and he doesn't want anybody who's not a Christian, then that's his prerogative. It's his living room. That's not censorship. He's not, you know, and in his living room, if he decides that the only topics that can be talked about in his living room is Maserati repair and fly fishing, it's his living room. That's not censorship.
Yeah,
that's inside his property.
Or someone who says, you know, I don't want people cursing in my house. I would say that, I mean, I curse all the time, but I'm on radio, so I don't curse on radio, and I've kind of trained myself to not. I curse like a freaking sailor when I'm not on radio. Not so much anymore, actually, because it kind of training yourself to make sure you don't cuss on air after, you know, 50 years of cussing all the time. You kind of get twitchy when you hear a cuss come out of your mouth. Also, when I'm listening to other podcasts now that aren't even on radio, when I hear a cuss, I kind of jump a little bit. Thanks, government. But I would say that in a way, saying that you don't want people cussing in your house is one of the most libertarian things you could do.
Yeah. Yeah, you're expressing your own property rights.
Yeah.
And this is going beating up Hoppe just a little bit. This is something that he doesn't actually fully understand, because then he takes this out and he imagines that the public has some type of unified property right over an entire geographic area, you know, creating borders.
He needs to be physically removed. That's what I think.
Yeah.
Hoppe does.
Yeah. But he's completely inconsistent in that, you know, a public can't own massive hundreds of millions of acres of bare land.
Yeah.
That they're themselves are not allowed to go on and do anything. You know, how can you say you own it or own some stake in it if you're not even allowed to go out there and do anything? That's ridiculous. It's stupid. You know, it's a stupid way of thinking, but Hop believes that. So he's,
you know, people are so brainwashed about government solutions being correct that novel, workable, better solutions seem insane. You know, like, yes. An example is, you know, the answer to hijacking is allow people to bring guns on planes. And of course, it wouldn't be anyone with a gun. It would be people that the airline has pre-screened, and it would be, you'd have to have frangible ammo so it wouldn't go through the plane. Another example is extinction of animals. The solution to that is allow people to buy and sell and eat the animal. That sounds insane. Yeah. You know, just on its face, and you explain, well, you know, what's never going to go extinct? Cows, chickens. Yeah. You know, eggs. Stuff that are made for eating and raised, you know, those are some of the most common animals in the world right now, cows and chickens. And the funny thing is too, like, you know, I mean, cows are pumped with steroids and, but you know, there's cows that aren't pumped with steroids, and there's cows that are pumped with steroids, but aren't made to live in a little room and are allowed to roam free. There's a lot of that in Wyoming. And I would say they have pretty good lives, definitely compared to like caged chickens and those, you know, beef cattle that don't get to move much, and the milk cattle that don't get to move much. But, you know, if you want to see what happens when you can't, have commercial use of an animal, go to India. I've been told by people who've been there, first person, you know, second person to me, that in India, where cows are sacred, it's against the law to eat them, and people worship them. Cows are everywhere and sick, terribly sick, and pooping in the streets, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've been told that.
Yep.
I watched a show on Netflix last night that I can't remember the title of it, but it's about how your eyes play mind tricks on you. And the first episode of the show, it's a series. And the first episode, they claim that they're going to show you a bunch of things that are going to amaze you. And they show you a couple card tricks that I spotted right away, because I am really good at spotting when someone palms a card or, you know. But one of the things that they showed me that I really struck me as interesting, they had four stationary footballs on the screen, and then the background was all these flashing, moving lights of different colors. And they said, stare at one football. Don't take your eyes, don't take your focus off the one football. And what happens is your brain begins to ignore the other three footballs, and they literally vanish from your vision. As long as you're staring at the one football, the other three vanish. Now, this is exactly like what you were talking about, where a person becomes so dependent upon the state that they can't see the other footballs. Even if you tell them that they're there, they cannot see them because they've imagined them out of reality. And the guy explaining this is saying that's what your brain does. Your brain decides that those other footballs don't really exist, and it just wipes them off. And you will actually see the other moving dots being where those footballs should be because your mind is playing this trick on you. And I think that's what people do with the state. There's like the roads argument, like, who really builds the roads? Companies build the roads. People build the roads. The magic government doesn't build the roads. But people are so dependent on thinking that only the government can do these things that that's the only thing that they can see. They can't see any solution that's not within that scope.
Yeah. So when we were doing one, it took us about a year to do the 12, maybe 6 months, to do the 12 steps of Statists Anonymous, where we basically treated the love of the state, the worship of leaders, the need for the magic parchment. We treated that like the disease it is, like alcoholism, which is definitely a disease, whether it's, you know, physical or psychological or both in different people. It's a compulsion to drink. You know, there's AA is good for a lot of things. It's not good for a lot of things, but it is good for a lot of things. And one of them is like defining AA. And it's got a section there of like, I don't remember the exact wording. I was never a book thumper. There are a lot of book thumpers in AA who their whole life becomes AA. It's very cult-like. And they like, they're like, well, you know, and not just the ones who say, well, read page 449 of the big book, because, you know, that's one everyone can quote. But when they say, you know, read the second page of the new glasses story in the fifth edition, you know, like those people don't have lives, but hey, they're alive and they're not, you know, they're not robbing people to get drunk or to get high. So, you know, and all these 12 step organizations, they're based on the same principles. So when we were doing the 12 steps of AA and we had a lot of fun with it, we talked about later, we said, you know, when we're done with this, we may do, you know, 24 more episodes on the 12 traditions of AA and the 12 concepts of world service of AA, and which are lesser known things. They're more for like the people who are involved in, I guess I'd call the politics of AA, but it's not really, you know, it's a voluntary organization, but the structure of AA. Now, you and I looked at them and tried to figure it out, and it was like, we're not going to do, we're going to do one episode and only on the traditions. We're not going to touch the concepts. They're too statist. And the traditions are pretty statist, but we're going to, you know, to the point where we're not going to do a whole, you know, series on them. We're going to do one probably 40-minute episode here after we're about halfway through already. So yeah, they're just so statist. The reason is because the 12 steps of AA work for Statists Anonymous, which is something we made up, because they are aimed at the individual. They are aimed at the individual recovery of the individual member, whereas the 12 traditions are kind of like the corporate charter of AA, I guess I'd say.
Yeah.
The
structure of how the organization is put together.
Right. They define the, I wouldn't even say rules, but I would say best practice. I wouldn't say rules because, you know, breaking most of them will not get you kicked out. They'll get you gently reprimanded by older people with more recovery. But, you know, repeated breaking of any of the steps or the traditions can get people, you know, asked to leave that group, but you're never asked to leave AA, which I like. You know, no one can drum you out of AA. It's never happened. You could murder people in AA and they're still, you know, I don't think AA worldwide services would issue a note that you can't go into AA, because you'd go to prison for life and, you know, you'd go to the AA meetings in prison because it would get you out of your cell. So,
well, and they kind of addressed that a little bit in the traditions, where it says essentially AA does not involve itself in things that are not, you know, AA, involved in
recovery
in AA.
Yeah. So we're going to take a little break, and then we're coming back, and we're going to go through the 12 traditions of AA and try to apply them to Status Anonymous all in a row, one after the other. All right.
Worms.
All right, Ben, read your
my
I
version.
Changed leaders. We decided to try to make this work, but it really was trying to put a round peg into a square hole. So go ahead and read what you wrote here, and we'll laugh at how status this will sound, trying to be status anonymous.
So I put a couple notes before in the beginning that I changed leaders to guides, because leaders is one of those stupid words that causes endless debate among libertarians.
Although really there's nothing wrong with a leader, again, if it's voluntary. You know, I mean, you know, if you have a voluntary liberty organization and one person is kind of more of a power driver than the other and gets things done and has more involvement in it, they naturally kind of become the leader.
Yeah, there was a 3-day argument on Twitter that I was tagged with, unfortunately. You know how that happens, and you end up just going on. It just fills your feed with pollution from people going back and forth. And they were all saying either one of two things. Either ones were saying, we're anarchists, we can't have leaders. And the other is like, if the leader is voluntary, anything that's voluntary is voluntary. It's not, there's no force implied and there's no aggression if everything is voluntary. And then it goes to the other one. We can't have leaders. We're anarchists.
Here's my problem with not having a leader. And I am the undisputed leader of the Freedom Fiends. You know, that's not a question. I fire people. What is it Iggy Pop said? I love firing people. And that's kind of by default. It's because I showed up, you know, for years when Nima left and when Nima had to go have kids. And, you know, AA meetings are like that too. If you show up long enough and other people aren't interested in doing the non-glamorous work, like, you know, setting up the meeting, putting out the chairs and emptying the ashtrays and making the coffee. Well, they don't really have ashtrays anymore. But you know how non-smoking AA meetings started? Hubert Selby Jr. started them. At least he started them in the way that spread. Yeah, he had less than one lung, and he started the first non-smoking AA meeting in LA in the 80s or 70s or something. And they started to have other ones in LA until there were a lot of them, and then it spread to San Francisco, and then it spread all over the world. So there you go. But, but the one that he started was like, it was a meeting that already existed, but he was like everyone's favorite guy there, you know, as soon as he came in the door, cause he was kind of famous, but he's also just charming. And, you know, they had a vote and they voted to, make it non-smoking, and you could still go outside and smoke. But the problem with the argument of, you know, there shouldn't be leaders is, pretty much the option to having leaders is collectivism. So, I mean, there are other ways to organize things. You know, one way is what AA does, which is they have rotating leaders. So nobody ever kind of becomes like a little king. And I've told my story about that. I told the story about the woman who wouldn't leave when her 6 months were up being the leader of the meeting. And she brought bikers in and who were not in AA and scared everyone, you know, said, you know, this woman is not leaving. And of course she was an attorney and she was several years sober. And so basically what happened, this is the kind of stuff I love about AA. And this is a lot of it's based on the traditions is everyone just stopped going to that meeting. And when she didn't have a kingdom to lead, she just stopped going too. And then, you know, there were a couple people who kept going and, they called everyone else on the phone and says before email and, you know, it was widely used and they just said, hey, she's gone. Come on back. You know, so it went from 300 people to, you know, 10 people, and then she left. So, all right.
That's how voluntarism works, you know?
Yeah. Is it voluntarism? I don't know what we call this stuff we are. Voluntarism.
So you want me to read these 12 as I have horribly modified
them? Do you want to read them all and then talk about them, or you want to read one and talk about it, and then the next one? I think we should do it this way. Read one and then talk about it. So the first one, well, do you have the originals up? That would be helpful.
I can get them pretty quick.
Yeah, get the originals up. So,
Wikipedia.
Yeah.
Give me 1 second here.
Yep. So, 12 traditions of AA. So originally AA had no steps. It was, and then it had like four steps that they adopted for someone from something else. That basically they expanded into the 12 steps because they wanted to. I always figured this out. I figured this out before I knew it for a fact and found it out later as a fact. They wanted 12 because of the 12 disciples, and they were, you know, Christians. So they basically, you know, broke things into more steps. Like, you know, in the original thing, one of the four steps was, you know, making amends. In AA, they make that into three things, I think. You know, you become ready. They make it into four, actually. You become ready to make amends. You make a list of people you need to make amends to. You pray for help making amends, and then you make amends. So, you know, it's kind of like one of those backronyms, you know, where they like come up with a cool word and then make up things it stands for.
There tends to be a lot of numerology fascination with Christians. They 12 and 3 and
7.
144, 7. Yeah, they get really
144,000. Some
people literally turn that into a religion. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't worship numbers. All right, so
yeah.
What's the first tradition of AA?
The real one.
The first real one. Our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends on AA unity.
Yeah, and what's the first tradition you made up of Status Anonymous?
So I made that. Our common welfare should come first. Personal liberty depends on community commonly assured liberty.
I really hate this. But then again, like, I don't really like groups. And I, you know, I've probably fired as many fiends at this point as there have been. As there are fiends, at least, if not more. But, you know, I don't really like organizations, and I definitely like
individual.
Yeah, but then again, sometimes you can get more done with a bunch of people than with one person. Even with, you know, not necessarily like, you know, marching in the streets or whatever, but even things like, oh, you know, let's say running a radio station or printing pamphlets or, you know, anything that has logistics or stuffing envelopes or I don't know. I don't know any libertarian except the Libertarian Party that probably stuff envelopes. But yeah, I don't really like that one. But I guess it does have some use because personal liberty depends on our assured liberty. I don't know. It just sounds so military, man. All right. Let's go to the second one. Unless you got more on the first one.
The only thing else I would say to it is that anything that's too centralized becomes dangerous. It becomes both dangerous to itself and its members, and it also becomes vulnerable to attack from outside. So, you know, the more individualized everything in liberty is, the better it's going to be.
Also, I'm sure there's some things in here that we could bring up about looking out for mission creep. Like a really good example is the Free State Project, which was a really good idea. And it's got a lot of people to New Hampshire and got a lot of people involved in things. But the actual organization itself has gone horribly haywire, especially from involvement of the Koch brothers and funding from the Koch brothers. But, you know, basically when they first started, they said, you know, this will exist only until we get this many people pledged and in the state. And they've passed that and they're still together. And one of the reasons they're still together is because, you know, the main board members are making large salaries and they don't want to have to go get jobs. So,
right.
You know, and that's a huge problem is mission creep. And, you know, I talk about this in my book, User's Manual for the Human Experience, that is largely based on like reappropriating these ideas, but not for recovery and not for anti-statism, but for running small companies. And, one of the things I'm a really big fan of is ad hoc organizations, like what the Free State Project was supposed to be. Things that exist for a period of time to get a goal done and then disband when the goal is achieved. And I really think more people should do that than do, you know, I think entrenched organizations don't get as much done sometimes.
Yeah. Speaking of the Free State Project, I think it was 2013 at the Liberty Forum in New Hampshire that The head person of the Free State Project stood up in front of everybody and said that she wanted a six-figure income to continue her work. And I just thought, you know, it's something you and I have talked about over and over and over. When people think they can make a full-time living off of the essentially the liberty movement, then one of two things is going to happen. They're either going to be horribly discouraged and fail, or it's going to become something that's not really liberty-oriented.
Yeah, that lady should go get a real job. And she is an attorney. You know, she could go be an attorney and maybe make six figures. But trying to make it on the back of people – and I'm not saying people shouldn't make money for, you know, a job done. I'm not saying liberty should never make money. But what I'm saying is, like, the idea of a guaranteed salary of an organization that's committed to liberty – kind of sounds crazy, except, you know, and how do you even do that except by getting donations from billionaires, which means billionaires want some influence, which means, you know, kicking out people like Ian Freeman who helped build the thing, you know, once you don't need them anymore, they throw them under the bus. And they have said that the Free State Project is a bus. And what they said was it's a bus to get people to New Hampshire. And then after you get off the bus, you don't need it anymore. And that was like a thing they said originally. But apparently now they want to bolt the bus to the ground and charge admission to look at the bus. All right. So, or at least, you know, the bus is just going to generate money by sitting there bolted to the ground. So what's number two in the AA traditions?
Number two of the real ones is, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God, as he may express himself in our group consciousness. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. There's some good points in that, but there's...
The God thing a lot of people are going to have problems with, but the last part of that is great. Read that again.
Yeah. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern.
Yeah, and you changed that to, our guides to that end are but trusted servants. They do not govern and are not revered. I think we go with the original one, the end of the original one there. Read that again. That's really important, I think.
The original one?
Yeah, the leaders.
Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern.
Yeah, I do not abide to that on the Freedom Fiends. It's my property, though. AA is not anyone's property. And I could definitely see an organization existing for liberty that's kind of run, not like the meetings of AA, the recovery meetings, but like the meetings that not many people see, that like the meetings, the group service representative meetings, which are kind of like in AA, in 12-step organizations, each meeting has a GSR, which is not gunshot residue. It's group service representative, who's kind of like the congressman who goes to a once-a-month meeting of everyone in that area. And then, you know, once every 6 months, somebody from that meeting goes to the World Service meeting, or once a year or something. So it does have something like that, and it sounds slow and bureaucratic, but it's actually a great way to kind of get group consciences on things, which are one of the things I like about AA. Group consciences for decision making are not – they involve voting, but it's not a straight democracy. It's basically you vote on it to kind of get a feeling. It's like polling the jury at the beginning of the jury discussion, and then you discuss from there. Maybe you take another vote, but probably not. You know, you just discuss it until – basically, you know, people kind of agree more or less on something, or they leave the room in a huff. I mean, I guess you could say in a way it's just survival of the strongest, but it does seem to come up with some good ideas. It was definitely used for at one point when I was in AA in the 90s, they decided to update the book. It hadn't been updated in 20 years or something, the AA book, and a lot had changed, and they changed some of the stories and not much of the rest of it. But, you know, that was done. It was like a 3-year process. And I mean, the other option really would be like having one person do it, and then it would be like his view of AA. So doing it this way kind of got a wide bunch of input. So that's good.
I put that into our variation of it about reverence, because I just see so many people that call themselves libertarians or ANCAPs or voluntarists or whatever. And they build up this small group of people, whether it's, you know, dead Murray Rothbard or living Hoppe or, you know, some liberty cheerleader that has a podcast or a YouTube show or something. And they place them in a level of reverence that is really disgusting to me. It's like, you know, why don't you just have them wear a fancy Pope hat and a giant cape everywhere?
Yeah. Larkin Rose is one of them. What's the guy that pleasures himself in parking lots? Kokesh is one of them. Molyneux is the big daddy of them. And, you know, there's people probably saying, oh, you're just envious. But no, I'm not. Ian Freeman's a great guy. Mark Edger, a great guy. And those guys are more popular than we are. And, you know, have as many people, more people listening to them a day than Larkin Rose does. But I don't think they have as many people worshiping them. And I think that Larkin Rose and Kokesh and Molyneux encourage cult-like behavior to themselves. And it's really hard not to. But I'll say something else, too, that I learned from playing in bands is that it's really easy to have blinders on with regards to an audience. And I'm completely the opposite of this. I tend to drive my audience away because I really don't care what they think of me. And that sounds really callous, but it's also kind of like, you know, I don't care if someone takes their money and leaves. I don't care, you know, if they take their respect and leave. And I think that those people like Kokesh and Larkin Rose and, you know, Molyneux and a few others, I think they're very addicted to it. And here's the thing that I learned in a band was that it's kind of I've changed it a lot. I used to be, you know, insanely egotistical, very drunk, very on drugs, and into a rock star mentality when I played in a band and, you know, was signed to Warner Brothers and was touring America and touring Europe, you know, playing clubs, but packing them sometimes and playing to nobody sometimes. And, but had a good following. And the thing I've noticed is that when you're in a band, when the room lights go down and there's just the spotlight on you, there can be 20 people in the front and the room looks full to you. It's kind of like what happened to Trump. You know, like he's saying he had more people at his inauguration than Obama. It's blinders. You only see the people in the front row. The people in the front row freaking love you. That's why they're in the front row. And the front row. And so don't be blind. Don't have blinders on. And, you know, and I would also say, too, that as far as building a following, you know, the message is more important than you are. And you should never forget that. To the point where I built something, the Freedom Fiends, where I don't have to be on it. And the message is still good. You know, it's something people can tune into and it's not all about me. Like, I don't even show up. I don't need to show up because I've found such great people, you know?
Something I've observed with some of the people, some of the great leaders, is that they have certain business models that they fall back on for income. So, for instance, this is going to sound like a real stretch, but hang with me on this. When I was a Domino's Pizza store manager, if our numbers weren't good for a month, I knew that all I had to do was make up a bunch of basic pepperoni pizzas and run them out in my van with some signs at a big intersection or like right across the street from McDonald's, put up signs that says $5 pizza, and I could sell, you know, 30, 40 pizzas in like 10 or 15 minutes. And that would be enough that right at the end of the month, I could boost up my revenue the food costs.
Now you get shot. You get shot for that. They call a SWAT team. Probably.
Yeah. I actually had a Wendy's call the police on me at one point.
The competition. Yeah.
Yeah. But I've noticed this with some of these great liberty, great men, is that they'll kind of get themselves into a financial pickle because they've tried some things that didn't really work. And then they have routines, business models that they fall back on. Oh, I know. I'll just make a smart aleck remark to a TSA agent and get arrested. Yay.
Beg for money for getting arrested. Yeah. I have a theory, too, that some of those people are actually government agents at this point. I'm not going to say which ones, but I will say that I've talked to two attorneys, and it is their opinion that you don't get arrested for firearms charges on the street in D.C. and get a charge, you know, arrested for felony amounts of drugs in your home in Virginia the same week and get on probation.
And then traipse around the countryside.
And traipse around the countryside, pleasuring yourself in Walmart parking lots. Coke cash.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know that he's a government agent, but lawyers I talked to said they'd be kind of astonished if he was, if he hadn't worked a deal. You don't get you. Yeah. Although the moving to a different state sounds like that would be an indicator, but actually you can. Sometimes if you're on probation or parole, you can move to a different state if it's okayed by your officer and you pick another person to meet with, another probation officer or parole officer in the other state. But that can happen, but probably not the traveling around the country and certainly not the, you know, serving a couple of weeks in jail and then never having any more jail. So, yeah.
Yeah, another business model seems to be to go on a very important long-distance trip in an undependable car and then have it break down in a city that's far away from home and then get on Twitter and Facebook and beg, because it's an emergency, I can't get home to my wife, you know. But whatever. Whatever works. Whatever your business model. If you got to make 20, 30 pizzas and run out and sell them real quick, hey, you know, it's a business model.
Yeah, yeah. Yep, I just consistently deliver good-sounding audio and try to help other people do the same.
Yeah.
Whether I'm on it or not, it doesn't matter. All right, so we're cool. Everyone else isn't, except except Free Talk Live and the people that are on cussfreeliberty.org. They're all cool. Except when Tom Woods has on people that have a vested interest in saying that AA is bad and give handpicked wrong statistics that AA is bad. That I didn't.
You know, since we're picking on Tom Woods, he did something else that kind of irritated me. He had Scott Horton on his show. Scott's a great guy.
Scott's great. I love Scott. I listen to him all the time now.
So he had him on the show. This was back before the election. And it was supposed to be a debate between Walter Block, senile, old, inconsistent Walter Block. Here's a quick story about Walter Block. 2012, he was told he was going to speak before Ron Paul at a Ron Paul rally. And they basically handed him a topic and they said, talk on this, stay away from abortion, don't talk about abortion. And he forgot and walked on stage and starts talking about abortion.
He's again it, right?
Yeah.
Well, he has this idea, the evictionism BS.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I think Walter Block should be rare and legal. All right. Let's move on.
Yeah. Anyway, so Tom Woods had a debate between him and Scott Horton and Tom Woods was clearly taking sides on it. And constantly using Rothbard as an appeal to authority, and it really sounded bad, and I don't think they really let Scott say his piece, and instead, you know, Walter Block in his Holmesy style just repeated horrible fallacy after fallacy after fallacy that he had nothing to support anything that he was saying. It was really disgusting. But anyway, not my show. So if Tom Woods wants to have a half crazed old senile man. You know, that's
yeah,
great.
And he's
I'm
gonna,
a half crazy senile old man. I can do it.
He's going to hear about this and get upset. He won't address it because he has a rule of like, you know, I don't give people like that attention because they're just trying to bump up their numbers by cutting me down. No, we're not. We don't care. We love you. We love Tom. I love Tom Woods. I'm really glad he exists.
Tom's done great work.
I don't listen to him much because I don't really like his style, but I would highly recommend him to someone new to Liberty and say, here, yeah, just, you know, if they're like, well, who would build the roads? I'd say, listen to this guy for a couple episodes. You'll figure it out. Or if he doesn't tell you, you know, so.
Yeah. I was talking to somebody just recently about Tom Woods and the subject came up that actually we were talking about the Libertarian Party. And I said then that if the Libertarian Party were really serious about what they say they are, they would have Tom Woods as their presidential candidate, not some former Republican governor.
Yeah.
All right.
They probably have a better chance of it with Tom Woods, too. He's got a huge following. Yeah.
Yeah. You want to go to three?
Yeah, let's do this and maybe call it a day. Let's see how long this one takes. All right.
The, The only this is number three from AA.
Give me the AA requirement. Yeah, okay, sorry, the real one.
Yeah, the only requirement for AA membership is to desire to stop drinking. That's pretty simple.
Isn't it a desire to stop drinking?
Is a desire to stop drinking.
See, I'm more of a book thumper than I thought. All right, so I like that. I really do like that. I said before that the 12, you know, originally there were no steps. AA started, it didn't even have a name when it started. The name Alcoholics Anonymous comes from the title of the book, Alcoholics Anonymous, which is also known as the Big Book of AA. It's kind of the Bible of AA, which I think the organization started in 1935-ish, and then like 3 or 4 or 5 years later, they came out with the book, first edition of the book. They sobered up a homeless newspaper, former newspaper reporter, to edit the book. Like, they went down to the gutter and found him and said, you know, we're going to sober you up and then give you a job immediately. It doesn't pay anything. All right. So they did that. And also, you know, there's a lot of critiques of AA, and some are really taking the principles over the personalities, because the co-founder of AA, Bill W., was a very imperfect man. But, you know, a lot of times the people that drive things and power drivers who get things out in the world that are good ideas are often, you know, not perfect men, but not as bad as like Kokesh or, you know, what's that other guy? The other two we're talking about. But, you know, he did some sleazy things. He, you know, he had an affair with his wife, and then he actually made a lot of royalties from the book. That's how they paid him, was royalties. He owned the royalties for the book, Alcoholics Anonymous, and you know, millions of dollars made on it, and a lot. He gave a lot more of it to his wife. I mean, to his mistress than his wife. You know, he kind of like let his family not starve, but you know, gave a lot more to the mistress, and the wife put up with him for a long time, and while he was an alcoholic. So I think, if nothing else, she should have gotten some money for that, because by his own admission, he wasn't a good guy to her. So anyway, and other things like that. But yeah, that's not the organization. You know, it's really, I think the point of all of this is to build things that are bigger than you. Like, a really good example is Free State Project. Everyone's heard of it. Who can name that Jason Sorens came up with the idea? Not that many people. A lot less people than have heard of it, you know? Mm-hmm. A lot of the things that Freedom Fiends say, a lot of the meme-y kind of stuff that we come up with, like state speech is hate speech, which is, people who've never heard of the Freedom Fiends say that now. And I can actually show the point in the episode 5 years ago where I said that, just off the top of my head, to Nima. I kind of like had to struggle with it. You know, we were like, you know, state speech is bad. State speech is bad speech. We were trying to make something up. I said, oh, well, state speech is hate speech. And Nima's like, yeah, you know, and don't tase me, bro. And, you know, bad audio is hate crime, and guns and weed. There's, you know, people, I've heard people say guns and weed, the road to freedom, who've not seen the movie. That's kind of a meme too. But not by sheep, for sheep, on sheep. That's too obscure. That's the one you came up with. That's the, because when we figured out that the Constitution, which seems like a good idea, but is kind of written for sheepish follower peoples, is written on, people say it's written on hemp, but that was the drafts of it.
Yeah, and the Declaration.
The Declaration was written on hemp. But yeah. But the actual copies, the final copies that were distributed to the states on the Constitution.
And the enshrined one in Washington,
yes,
D.C.
are written on vellum, which is sheepskin. So by sheep, for sheep, on sheep. We the sheeple. That's a good button. Yeah, so
you know, it's very much like what Boston did, though, with
Boston Tea Party,
how to deal with police. Yeah,
you and the police.
He started that thing.
Yeah, yeah.
He started that, and it became cop block, and all the you know, photographing cops and videoing cops, and all that came from Boston.
Boston
and
Tea Party.
Nobody knows.
Yeah,
that.
Everyone should go read "You and the Police" by Boston Tea Party. I'm also reading another good book that's written by Boston Tea Party's a libertarian, but there's a book written by a statist that's great. It's called "How to Arrest Proof Yourself," and it's written by a former FBI agent, current defense attorney who's really like fed up with, you know, the machine of this, of he still loves government, but he's I guess you'd say he's somebody who's very strongly in favor of reform, not realizing that, you know, that probably wouldn't fix much. But it's a great, you know, and there's people who would say, probably the same people who say it's censorship to have a cuss-free liberty private thing that you're sharing with the public. Some of those same people would probably also say, I'm not reading some book by some cop. No, you have to read the book by the cop. You know, those are the people that learn how to deal with police from Adam Kokesh. You know, they would think that's a good idea, and reading How to Arrest Proof Yourself, which is by a cop, is a bad idea. No. The cop knows what cops look for, and that's what this whole book's about. His basic premise is, if cops can't see you, they can't arrest you. You know, it's about making yourself
invisible.
Yeah, and
we really don't do anybody any good in jail. You're not helping anybody by sitting in a jail cell, you know?
Yeah.
You're not helping yourself. It's costing you money. You're not making money unless you have a beg campaign going on that's based on
It's making the state money.
It is, yeah.
That's one of the premises of this book, How to Arrest Proof Yourself, is that the clueless idiots and the nonviolent offenders who are sitting in jail for drugs or having a gun, just, you know, because they didn't know, like, their particular gun wasn't legal in their particular state, or having or failure to appear for some traffic thing. He said that those people, if the police stopped arresting those people, they'd never have the money to arrest the real criminals and all of the trappings of the state would go away. There wouldn't be any money to pay police or judges or jailers or, you know, bailiffs or any of those people. All that money comes from, I mean, even from, like, you know, from fines and lawyers get money. And but actually, like, you know, your local jail gets money from the federal government,
right,
to put you in jail. For every night you're in there, they make money. They like to have you there. They want to have you there. Yeah. And another thing he said, too, is that between 60% and 80% of people in jail are there from something that started as a traffic stop. So basically, you know, the same thing Boston says, like, have your car normal looking, have your registration up to date, don't have a broken taillight, don't drive erratically, don't drive drunk, and, you know, just look like a square. And you are far less likely to end up in jail because you're not the guy that gets pulled over that leads to the phishing episode that leads to you going to jail.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people don't know that when you're in state-level prisons, and especially federal-level prisons, according to the state you're in, you are issued essentially a debit card or a credit card. It's actually a credit card. While you're in there, and everything that you buy, like if you need another pair of underwear or you need a new toothbrush or whatever, it goes on that credit card. And when you get out, you have to pay it as a part of your probation. Wow. So, and if you don't pay your credit card, they'll come and pick you up on a probation violation. Yeah. So it's literally like a debtor's prison. Make you go into debt.
Is that a good way to get some credit? Go to jail? I'm assuming this doesn't count to help your credit report.
No.
I wonder if getting arrested negatively affects your credit report. I have no idea. Do you know, DJ? She's asleep.
It probably does.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. All right. So, well, we got some more on this. We want to do one more. The only requirement for liberty is, I was going to say about that one, the only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. The way that happened was, so in the 30s, they came up with AA, and in the 50s, they wrote the tradition. So the 12 steps came after 20 years of AA spreading. So they had a lot of experience. And when Bill Wilson was writing the book, The 12 and 12, The 12 Steps and 12 Traditions of AA, which is where the first publication of these things came from, and then he talks about them. The reason they came up with step three was when they were preparing for that book, they sent out the word through these, you know, leaders, the group liaisons, you know, rotating liaisons, you know, to send for every AA group to please send the New York World Office a list of all the requirements for membership, and they figured out that they, if they were all enforced at every meeting, no one could be a member. So I really like that one. And, you know, there's something that James Weeks says, like, anyone who doesn't love the state is a friend of mine. You know, like, he even likes, you know, like, Lefty. He is, I'm not going to say he's a commie. I make that joke every time. But, you know, he is friends with more people than I am who are left-leaning libertarians, and even, like, you know, all kinds of people who don't love the state. Like, I think he even might consider, you know, Antifa an ally, although he makes fun of them, and I could be wrong about that. But although they want a state, they really do. They just want a communist state where they're in charge. But I really like that. I like the, you know, anyone who doesn't love the state is a friend of mine. I think that's a good inclusion for friendship.
The only difficulty with that is once you get to a certain age, you start getting more and more curmudgeon-y, and you start, you know,
getting pickier.
You want to isolate yourself.
Yeah. 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 Because there are also a lot of people in Liberty that I don't want to be anywhere near. And, you know, like, for instance, those people who say that it's censorship, that's ridiculous. And people who are really rude and mean to people, but say, well, I didn't violate the non-aggression principle. You know, those Napsters, those people that think the nap is all, and, you know, a few other varieties of people. I mean, you know, Adam Kokesh probably says he doesn't love the state, but I don't listen.
Well, he's fine as long as he stays out of my living room.
I'm quoting my friend Tony Yannick from like 35 years ago or something. I said when I was like 19, I was in a band with this guy who was like 30, who was older and, you know, never went anywhere. It was my first kind of real band. And he said, it's called the Armless Children. And he said that, you know, I turned him on to the Dead Kennedys. He'd never heard Dead Kennedys. And he's like, it's kind of interesting, you know, because he was an old like rocker, you know, he'd never really listened to punk rock, but he had an open mind about it. He's like, yeah, this is kind of interesting, kind of catchy. I can see why people like it. It's got a good drum beat because he was a drummer. So, but I said, you know, the singer, this is when Reagan was president. And I said, you know, the singer kind of sounds like, if Ronald Reagan sang, he'd sound like Jello Biafra. And Tony immediately said, if Ronald Reagan sang, I wouldn't listen. All right, we got to do one more. Let's do one more. I really like number four in AA. What's number four?
Okay, number four, each group should be autonomous, except in matters affecting other groups or AA as a whole.
Yes, I love that one. I think that's kind of how Cop Block operates, isn't it? Like,
I believe so. I think that's their basic model.
Like, you know, you could start the Cop Block group for your town today and use their logos. And I think that as long as you're not denigrating them or, you know, being statist and, you know, basically if you're doing some version of cop blocking, you know, you're good. The problem with that kind of thing though, too, of like, is that you can end up being blamed for things people do. Like, I can see how they got blamed for things that Cantwell wrote on their website because they have control over their website. But, you know, they don't have control over what local cop blockers do in the name of cop block. And unfortunately, though, they would get blamed for that then, at least in the minds of many. It's kind of like the BIPCOT no government license, though, too. You know, I created this thing that anyone can use on anything as long as, you know, they don't want the government to use it. That's the requirement for membership. The only requirement for membership of the BIPCOT license is not loving the government and not wanting them to use your stuff. Yeah. So, yeah, man.
Let's hit.
Are we done? We can do with
five if you want first.
I think there's the only desire for membership is a desire to stop drinking, is a desire for liberty. Each group should be autonomous except matters affecting abolitionists as a whole. You know, I mean, that can also, any of these can also be used for bad things too. I mean, I think that that's probably the structure of Antifa, you know, if you hate traditional marriage and, you know, free markets and wear black, you can be an Antifa. I actually made out with an Antifa.
Their definitions are pretty.
I actually made out with an Antifa girl a bunch in Berlin over several days' time when I was there with my band in 1990. Yeah, she was pretty, but she didn't bathe enough. All right, so moving on. Well, she lived in a squat with no running water, too. All right, so.
Number five, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the alcoholic who still suffers.
And yours is, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the enslaved who still suffer. I really like this one for liberty. I think that a lot of these star libertarians, like the ones we mentioned, and there's more. Mm-hmm. I actually have a document somewhere called celebritarians you can't love if you're in the Freedom Fiends. Let me see if I can find it. But it's not really you can't, but I tend to surround myself with people who don't love these people. All right, it's Stefan Molyneux, Jeff Berwick, Adam Kokesh, Larkin Rose, Chris Cantwell. And then also, just in general, the alt-right, the alt-light, flat earthers, the Venus Project, the Zeitgeist Movement, and Mark Stevens. All right. So those are the problems in the world, them and the government. But, a lot of times I think that those libertarians resemble government, resemble politicians, because I do believe that some people get into politics because they are genuinely good people and want to change the world. And as soon as they get into politics, they start getting tainted with it. And if they're good people, unless they're Ron Paul, who was some weird thing that was able to stay around, good people just don't stay in politics. They're not welcome there. And they get driven out or they become corrupt. And I think the same thing happens with a lot of celebritarians. I would be willing to bet that at one time, I don't think Molyneux. I think he's always been a self-serving, insane person. But, Kokesh at one point probably thought, I'm spreading liberty. I'm going to do this to spread liberty. I believe in liberty. Liberty is all. And then he started getting attention and, getting a little play from the ladies and getting little donations mm-hmm. and getting to crash on couches everywhere he goes. And then it becomes about yourself. And really, something that's valuable doesn't even need to have your cell phone. Cussfreeliberty.org is a good example. My name is not on that site. And BIPCOT.org, the BIPCOT license, my name is buried somewhere on that site. To use that license, you don't need to know who I am. I like to make things that I try to make it a rule, though, of every segment of a podcast to say the name of it. That's not out of egotism. That's because if the stuff gets rebroadcast, it's maddening. I hear this all the time. I listen to a lot of talk radio, and it's maddening to hear something I like and not know who it is to find more.
Right.
So this is the Freedom Fiends. Freedomfiends.com. Worms.
That, in addition to the health problems, that was kind of my motivation in creating and doing and then walking away from the whole Bad Quaker podcast thing. I mean, I did that. I had been hidden on the internet using a variety of fake names and probably getting as much done as I did when I was Bad Quaker. But I was doing it, on memes on FARC.com and on survival websites and gun websites. And, I was probably being just as effective then as I was when I was having 2,000 downloads a day, at Bad Quaker.
Yeah.
But
survival websites we won't name because we don't want to send them traffic anymore. That guy. Yeah. Go on.
Yeah. Which is also a business model, I might add, and that came straight from the horse's mouth.
Well, that guy, what's his name? We'll say the name of it. What is it? The Survival Spirico. Podcast. Yeah, that guy wasn't even really a liberty guy. That guy was a marketing guy who looked around and said, what can I make a podcast of that I can make an empire and make money? And he said liberty. And he started out as a deep constitutionalist and made fun of you for being an anarchist hard, and then later became an anarchist and never apologized. These people never apologized to.
Actually, Spearco kind of apologized. He came on my website and in the notes he said that he regretted it and wished that happened. So
never mind.
Yeah, it was pretty good.
Good for him.
Yeah. It's still a business model for him,
It's not a bad thing, but Tom Woods too, it's a business model, but I would say Tom Woods does it in a very not annoying way too. I mean, he does a lot of like, eh, check out my like affiliate linking kind of stuff, but you know, it's mostly Liberty stuff too. And, it's really short. Like his ads for his own stuff are just kind of like live reads that, you know, live reads are always kind of annoying, but I don't know, you know, you got mouths to feed. I guess, you know, it's fine to make Liberty your business if you remain ethical. I mean, Tom Woods can be kind of annoying, but I would say he's ethical, you know, annoying with things like having people like that on and praising them. But, the anti-AA, Beverly Hills shrink, but, and not even noticing like, oh, you know, this guy has an agenda, but overall, like I can't really think of anything, you know, bad Tom Woods has done. He's one of the good guys.
Well, cause we're not anti-business. You and I are not anti-business.
Definitely.
We're fine with doing business and making money. That's perfectly fine. Or even giving, you know, donations and stuff. We're okay with that. What I think the difference is like, if you have a chef, let's go in that direction. You have a chef that is very highly skilled and he runs his restaurant and he produces a certain, you know, product that he puts out and it's a high end and that's what he does. Then you have another restaurant that is, you know, strictly fast food. They'll adjust their menu to anything that will quickly get them a few more dollars. And, you know, they're putting out a really low quality product in high volume. But they're doing it purely to generate as much capital as possible so that they can open another outlet and shove more of this crappy food down your throat. Whereas that chef is a craftsman. And what he puts out is limited in quantity, but it's all going to be as high a quality as he can produce. And I think, you know, that's kind of the difference in somebody who is just doing it, just shoveling it out so that he can get as much money as he can and using obvious stunts and mind control. And once they start doing that, and I don't think Tom Woods uses any kind of stunts or mind control on people, but some do.
You're right. You know, a really good... A good model for me of how to do a lot of these things has always been Ian MacKay from Minor Threat and Fugazi.
Yeah.
And he's kind of a, like, he's famous for being an anti-rock star. Like, he's not a rock star, but he's, you know, I mean, he has sold probably a million records and, you know, between all his bands, which is not really rock star. Rock stars sell many millions of particular records usually, but you know, it's pretty big in punk rock. So one of the things I really love that he says in not every interview, but you know, there's some people that like are so busy, so used to being interviewed, you kind of like hear the same, some of the same stuff over and over in every interview. And one of the things he says in a lot of interviews is that he never understood the model of like, well, you've got a band, you got a following, you've sold some records, people like your records, they come to your shows. He never understood the thing of like having to conquer the world with it. He said, you know, that his bands and his label are run more like, you know, the family bakery that's been going for 50 years and been making amazing bread for one neighborhood, you know, that yeah. is success. And, you know,
yeah.
they make enough money to keep going, to pay their employees. And he actually was one of the first people I know. I mean, he's a little lefty in a lot of his ways and, you know, but for the most part, I think he doesn't like most politicians and thinks they're ridiculous. But one of the things I really liked about him was that he gave flex time, not only flex time, but free health insurance or included health insurance in his pay for his employees of his record company when it was not required by law. That's pretty far out, man. I mean, you know, really, like, health insurance shouldn't have anything to do with jobs, but if it's gonna, it's pretty awesome for a small business owner with, you know, 18 part-time employees or, you know, 10 or whatever to do that. And also like let people take off 4 months to go on tour with their bands. It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
So yeah, put your money where your mouth is. I guess that's the problem too, is there's a lot of people in Liberty who, talk a lot about the free market, but can't support themselves. And What else don't I like? People who talk about ethics all the time and are rude and mean to people. You know, the non-aggression principle is a code of ethics. And it's really weird to me that there are people who say, you know, worship that, but then are, you know, Richards to people a lot.
You know, this is kind of something that I've talked about with the Ten Commandments before, that once, like, if you look at it from a historical or a biblically historical perspective, everything was fine until you have to write down these things. Like, do you really need it written down? Don't kill somebody. Is that necessary for you to write that down?
Because the minute you write it down, it's don't murder somebody.
Yeah. Yeah. Don't murder.
Yeah.
So the minute you write that down, people start going, yeah, but this is not murder. That's not murder. And it almost gives them a license to go right up to the edge of murder.
Yeah.
And it's that way with the non-aggression principle. It's like, you know, okay, well, we have this principle and I'm not breaking it, but I can take it right up to the edge and I can stretch it till it's right at its
Well, there's a can, I goes back to the early Libertarian Party. They wrote an article about don't do macho libertarian flash, which is, I like macho libertarian flash when it does not have a victim. Like, macho libertarian flash or libertarian macho flash is saying, you know, when someone says, well, don't you think marijuana should be decriminalized and taxed? You're like, no, I think it should be completely legal and you should be able to buy crack in the vending machines next to the assault rifles next door to the privately owned middle school, you know, privately owned vending machines. And I believe that, and there's no victim in that. You know, that doesn't harm anybody. But people stretch the non-aggression principle to, like, how mean, you know, can't, well, it's a good example, like, how mean can I be to people and how much of a richer can I be to people? And there's a lot of them that we've never heard of too that are like that. I block them all the time.
I can park in front of your apartment and scream through a bullhorn.
Yeah.
And, you know, and that's not technically not violating the, so.
Yeah. You know. People that think that's okay. Yeah. Humans. All right. I think we're about done here. Let's see. You got some closing words of wisdom here.
Let's do this sixth one before we do that.
All right,
this is
sure.
a pretty good
and
one.
And we can say we got through half of them.
Yeah. An AA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the AA name to any related facility, or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. And that's kind of what everything we've been whining about for the last hour. That kind of fits into that. All these people bringing in things that are.
And it goes along with the, you know, the primary purpose should be carrying liberty to the statist who still suffers. I would really highly recommend anyone who's interested in this kind of stuff, whether you're in recovery or not, to read the book 12 Steps and 12 Traditions. You can buy it used probably on Amazon for a nickel, you know, from some guy who relapsed and sold all his AA books. It's a very common book. It's a bestseller and you can buy it cheap. It's a paperback. It's pretty short. You can read it in one day easily. And it talks about how these traditions came to be. And this tradition came because, this was inspired by the failure of a previous group called, I forget if it was the Washingtonians or some other group, but it was some Christian organization that helped drunks sober up. And it's where Bill W. originally got sober. And it was effective until they got involved in the temperance movement. You know, they were like, well, alcohol ruined our lives, so we should try to help outlaw it. And that destroyed that group because, you know, for one thing, like people who had a problem with alcohol but did not think who rightfully thought it should not be outlawed would not go to that group because they're like, they're a bunch of squares who want to control other people. And also just the infighting and bickering from them literally getting involved in national politics as like basically as lobbyists. In national politics, destroyed the group, you know, so if you have a primary function, keep to it, you know, and it goes back to the Free State Project. The primary purpose was to get people in New Hampshire, mission accomplished, break up the group, you know, don't try to find some other mission creep primary purpose. So yeah, man, if you have a primary purpose, keep to it. That's, And break up your group when its purpose is accomplished.
Yeah. Yep, definitely.
Yep, unless you're making money. Unless making money is your primary purpose. Yeah.
Right.
All right.
But that's in that thing, least problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose.
Yeah. And, you know, one of the reasons, there's two reasons really that AA is anonymous, you know, and like I said, the name Alcoholics Anonymous was originally the description of the members. You know, they said we're alcoholics who are anonymous. We're Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, it was anonymous before there was anonymous, decades before. So, you know, it's kind of a we are legion and together we're stronger than by ourselves. And, you know, a group of people can get, that's really what keeps people sober. I don't think it's God. I don't think it's, you know, the steps have something to do with it because it's really about getting rid of a lot of the baggage that you had and making restitution to people you need to. But I think it's the people that keep people sober in AA. It's having a support group, really. You know, it's having a strong support group and the idea that, like, you can go to anywhere in the world and go to an AA meeting and have friends, you know. It's kind of like Rotary Club or any of those things like that. So, yep.
Well, we made it through half of them.
We did, man. Well, that's good. I like that. Yeah. All right, man. Anything else, brother?
That's probably about covers it.
All right. I'm going to put this out today to my Patriots on Patreon. And then actually probably not until Friday because that's the next, you know, because there's already a Fiends today. I don't like to put out two in one day because people don't get them because if they use a podcatcher to automatically download them, it only downloads the latest one. So
yeah,
nope, I'll put it out Friday to the general public. All right, man.
Sounds good.
I really appreciate
and then
it.
In about a month, we'll do something again, and then maybe it'll be the last six or
it should
be something
it
else.
Should be. I think it should be.
Yeah,
I'm
most likely.
I'm psyched now. I want to do it. And then we'll take a look at those 12 concepts of world service and probably say no. Yeah, because it's really those are heavily influenced by Robert's Rules of Order, and I don't do that. All right, man. Lots of love, brother.
Yeah, same back at you. Take care of yourself.
Yep.
Worms.